Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America, bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology. Everyone, welcome into the program. I hope you're ready for today's show because we have the one, the only, Mr. Ralph Bond. He'll be joining us here in just a moment to tell us all about an amazing set of stories that he's found. And ladies and gentlemen, I can safely say we have not covered any of these because honestly, reading through them, they kind of seem like science fiction, you know, something that you'd see in like a Star Trek episode. But yeah, here we are. This is reality, and this is cutting edge stuff. That's what Ralph does. Ralph comes on the show every Friday to talk all about uplifting, fun stories that may have slipped past you, but that's okay. You know, there's a lot going on. We understand. And, he has your back. So everyone, ComputerAmerica.com. That's where you'll find everything, including past shows, future shows, show notes, articles, reviews, podcasts, everything that we do here with Computer America. You can, of course, find it there. And if you want a more Ralph-centric kind of focus, we, of course, include a link to his website as well, where he highlights all of his shows here on the program, as well as his work over at WKEX Portland, Oregon, and over on the Mark Mason Show. And ladies and gentlemen, always a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and jump right into it because, I think this one's going to be a great week. So ladies and gentlemen, once again, Ralph Bond, he is our science and technology trends correspondent. And that should kind of tell you where we're going with all this. Ralph, welcome back onto the program. How you doing? Oh, might be a little muted.
It might be good if I unmute my mic. How's that?
That would help. Hi, how you doing?
I'm here.
Perfect.
Anyway, great to be back. And as you alluded to, today's news items sound like science fiction. This is a really weird set of stories, but I love them.
Absolutely. So for anyone new out there who maybe hasn't heard one of our segments before, why don't you go ahead and tell the nice folks what it is that we try to do with our segment?
Sure. So I'm an aggregator of science and tech news features, rather. I find by monitoring a host of online news outlets. So I don't compose this material, folks. I gather it, and then I try to distill it and crunch it down into a really simple format that's very approachable and so on. And that's why it's so important for you to get the show notes at ComputerAmerica.com so that you can follow up, dig deeper if you want to, and so on and so forth. And so what I do is I look for important stories that don't usually capture mainstream press attention, but sometimes they're kind of weird and quirky and sci-fi like, which is definitely today. I'm on the lookout for news that gives a glimpse into where we're headed in robotics, medical technology, sustainable energy technology, transportation advances, space research, physics, you name it. Across the board, it's fair game for us to talk about. And what Ben and I try to do, as I alluded to a moment ago, crunch it down to the essentials, get to the simple points, and give you the links in the show notes. So if you want to dig deeper, and believe me, there's always a lot more going on in each one of these stories and what we're able to share with you today. But I encourage you to come out to ComputerAmerica.com, get those show notes, and follow along if you like.
Absolutely. And we're going to have those up as well as, and if you're watching the video portion, we're going to be showing the videos that you include, or if not, just the articles as well, because, there's usually a lot more to these articles, like you mentioned.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to check that out, ComputerAmerica.com. But Ralph, why don't we go ahead and get started with story number one, because this one, I swear, has been in every, not even science fiction, but fantasy thing that plants are great. Everyone loves plants. But what if they were a little bit more useful than, providing life on Earth? What else can plants do? And story number one was crazy.
Yeah. So that simple, kind of a simplified headline here. Someday your desk lamp may be a house plant. And I picked this story up at the MIT News website. And folks, of course, you can imagine how wonderful that site is. And check it out. It's great. And wasn't the deal in the Avatar movie? I haven't seen the latest one, where the plants would glow and so forth. Or some of them did. I recall from the first film.
a lot of what Avatar was you know, based on like deep sea. That's why James Cameron went down to the Marianas Trench and whatnot. He based a lot of that. And bioluminescence is a big deal in Avatar.
Yeah, sure. That's right. And this is kind of sort of related to that. So first off, lighting our homes and businesses and so forth accounts for 20% of worldwide energy consumption. Significant, right? And so the premise that the MIT crowd had was, so what if we could reduce that with plants that glow in the dark? Huh. So imagine that instead of switching on a lamp when it gets dark, you could read by the light of a glowing plant on your desk. Now, here's how they did it. By embedding specialized nanoparticles into the leaves of a watercress plant, that's their first experimental plant, as the image in the show notes shows, engineers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have induced the plant to give off dim light for nearly 4 hours. So timeout. We're talking about very early research, early results. Not super impressive, dim light for 4 hours. You can see in the picture, it's barely enough to maybe read at all.
Right.
But this is just the start. Just remember, this is just the start. So as the next line in my script says, that's not enough to be significant, but the team believes with further optimization, such plants will one day be bright enough to illuminate a workspace powered by the energy metabolism of the plant itself. And there's actually more we'll see in the end of the story. And this fascinating research is all about something called plant nanobionics, which is a new research area pioneered by MIT that aims to give plants novel features by embedding them with different types of nanoparticles. And by the way, if you go to the MIT website using our link in the show notes, you'll learn that about some other really bizarre stuff they've been doing with plants as well. So didn't have time to cover today, but check it out in the article. So to create their glowing plants, the MIT used three ingredients. So they have three factors. First, something called Luciferase. I hope I'm saying that right. I'll spell it for you. L-U-C-I-F-E-R-A-S-E. Luciferase.
Sounds right to me.
That's how I'm gonna pronounce it that way for now. Which is an enzyme, get ready, that gives fireflies their glow. Okay, so that's ingredient one. Next, a molecule called luciferin, which causes the luciferase to emit light. So you need this molecule to kind of ignite or turn on the fireflies enzyme, right? And finally, another molecule called coenzyme A, which helps the process along by removing an element that inhibits the luciferase activity. So a lot of research here based on good old fireflies and how they work and seeing if you can make a plant take on those properties, which is exactly what they did. So the MIT team packaged each of these three components into a different type of nanoparticle carrier. And when I read this, Ben, and maybe you're thinking the same thing, I thought, well, whoa, this is, you know, I'm so used to the world of grafting plants, right? Or maybe people who are into creating all types of roses will graft one type of rose onto another and create a new version. Well, it's just sort of like grafting the feature from an insect into a plant. It's pretty wild. The researchers also figured out a way to prevent these ingredients from reaching concentrations that could be toxic to the plants. So that's kind of cool too. And here's the drum roll, please, that I think is just really fires the imagination. The MIT team believes this technology could be scaled up and ultimately go beyond indoor lighting to someday create large trees that could function as self-powered streetlights. Wow, that could be really profound. We all know that in our urban areas and elsewhere, particularly though urban areas, lighting is so critical to help reduce crime and increase traffic safety, pedestrian safety, and so on. What if you could augment our streetlights or create trees and plant them where it's too expensive maybe to bring in the infrastructure for street lighting and so on and so forth in rural areas? How cool could this be? And I just love this story on so many levels. And again, it's early research, This may take decades to fully fruition, but we'll see. It's kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. And very, very early. I mean, I guess, Ralph, what they're showing here is it's possible. And, you know, I like that they mentioned the fireflies and, you know, kind of where they got this from, because that's what it kind of looks like. It looks like plants that are glowing like fireflies would.
Absolutely.
But of course, instead of, you know, the quick blinking that fireflies do, it's continuous over a couple of hours.
Right.
I'm so excited that it's early, but also I'm curious, like, you know, do each one of these plants have to be kind of like renewed with more chemical once it's kind of spent, and, you know, kind of do
Great
these things
question.
Have to continuously be kind of like refilled, Ralph? You know, does each plant have to be kind of created? Can you grow it in some kind of soil rich nutrient? So many questions, but what they're showing here is the possibility, I guess.
Well, yeah, you're so right on so many levels. One question I had, and I need to go back and really dig deeper in the article. Can you take take the giant maple tree that's in my front yard here, by the way? I live outside Portland, Oregon. So we have really, really big trees here. But could I inject my tree with this cocktail and it suddenly starts glowing? Or is this something you have to grow from a seedling? How do you sustain this? To your point, how do you sustain this? They obviously think they must know or believe there's a scientific path to enable one to have trees that could be like streetlights. So that means sustainability. How can the tree itself regenerate or sustain this cocktail of ingredients to keep the glowing going?
it would be kind of cool if they could, you know, because obviously for those who are watching the video, you can kind of see you know, the lab tech either soak the plant or, you know, either you know, kind of saturate the leaves and it soaks it up like that. So at least it's not a genetically modified, you know, it's not something that's going to come alive and, you know, kind of ruin us all. But Ralph, maybe you know, if they can get this to be some kind of, like, let's say, spray or mist that they can spray on trees and then the trees would absorb it, that would be, I think, a very, very cool application, you know, you'd have to go around and, you know, kind of keep spraying the trees and make sure that everything's, you know, kind of glowing, but it could be a fun novelty for, you know, kind of gardens and whatnot. It could be, it could be like a fun product more so than like hard coated into things. Or maybe even if the city were to, Ralph, you know, like the center medians with like plant life, what if they were able to spray center medians with this and then be much more visible? Lots of applications so early, but still a lot of fun. And my favorite part, unlike my wife who kills plants on the daily, this does not kill the plant. So the plants continue. Don't tell her I said that. But yeah, this one is this one actually does not kill the plant, which is very, very cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad they made that a priority because really it wouldn't make a lot of sense if it didn't. So story number one, story number two. Let's go ahead and switch over real quick. And it looks like it's going to be an enzyme rich kind of day because let's talk about this.
Second story about the amazing world of enzymes. Headline here, scientists discover an enzyme that can use air to generate electricity. How could I resist this subject line, right? I mean, this is irresistible. Good old popular science. And here's another, as we just said, another amazing enzyme-related story. So a team of researchers led by scientists at the Monash University Biomedicine Discovery Institute, great title for an outfit, in Melbourne, Australia, recently discovered an enzyme that can convert air directly into an electrical current. Cool. An enzyme, by the way, is a substance produced by a living organism, which acts as a catalyst to bring about a biochemical reaction. So the enzyme we're talking about here in specific is one called HUC, that's H-U-C, which is an enzyme found in Microbacterium smegmatis, I hope I'm saying that right, which is a common soil bacteria. So I want to stop here and let this sink in. An enzyme that can convert the air into an electrical current, and guess what? It's not exotic. It's a common soil bacteria. I mean, this is just, wow, you can just already, your mind's probably spinning with possibilities. The HUC enzyme enables bacteria to get some of the energy they need to survive right out of the atmosphere. Now, By studying the movement of electrons, they found that a Huck enzyme alone was able to convert extremely small amounts of hydrogen in the air into electrical currents by oxidizing hydrogen without allowing the presence of other substances to disrupt the process. And the researchers said the Huck enzyme is very good at doing this job. The Huck enzyme is not only efficient at turning hydrogen into electricity, it's also stable. This is a really important point. So one, we're talking about an enzyme that's in a common soil bacteria. Number two, we're going to find out now how stable this thing is. You can freeze the Huck enzyme or heat it to 80 degrees Celsius. That's 176 degrees Fahrenheit. And it still retains its ability to generate energy. So, no surprise, from a practical energy generation standpoint as a candidate for this purpose, this means the Huck enzyme doesn't need to be kept at special temperatures or in special storage conditions to do its work. Check, check, check on practicality, right? I love this story. And as the Huck enzyme is found in common soil bacteria, it's a readily available resource. Now, by fully exploiting the amazing potential of the Huck enzyme, the Monash University team hopes to someday, again, stressing here, we're talking about trends, we're talking about early research, okay, folks? But they hope someday to see electronic devices powered entirely using just the air around us. Now, the research paper talks more about small devices, maybe your cell phone or something like that, right? We're not talking about your car. My friend Mark Mason joked maybe there'll be a soil-covered Tesla someday. Well, no, this is not what we're talking about. But for small devices, maybe yes. And hey, every molecule or every tiny bit of energy we can save and generate sustainably is, of course, a good goal. Who knows? Bacteria from dirt might be the answer for some things.
There's always some kind of application for really, really low amounts of energy. You can think like buoys out in the ocean that use the waves to kind of power those signals and things like that. I am curious about concentrations because obviously they didn't talk about that. I'm sure it's very low, right now because it's research.
Right.
But Rob, we cover a lot of, kind of space exploration and other things. I am curious if they were to send stuff like this and, kind of culture the soil on other planets, maybe something over there. We talk about how to generate electricity on, Mars or the lunar surface, stuff like this, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So another very, kind of very like cool. Twilight Zone, weirdo sci-fi kind of thing, but fun.
it is. And even more practical that it doesn't need special temperature, which in a lot of cases does stop a lot of research, and it does not, and it doesn't care about contaminants. So this one is definitely very, very promising. And Monash University, I think that might be the first time we've talked about research from there on this program.
Yeah, I know. So, isn't that something? And it also brings up a point, Ben, thinking about the past, 6 to 8 months or something, how many stories have we had about some great research and work being done in Australia? It keeps popping up. It's going to pop up again in today's segment too. So it's a salute to the down under bunch.
Absolutely. And hey, story number two, story number three, like you said, also from Australia. And this one hits a little bit closer to home because this one could be going inside your body. And, high tech and medical advancements that are, treat your body more effectively than, because Ralph, really, if you think about it, up until, 20, 30, 40 years ago, we've had better, penicillin and better medicine, but really, we've only talked about, bandages that stop the bleeding and, kind of sewing people together. Medical technology is very, has been very primitive up until the last 30, 40 years. So great to see new advances being made in all kinds of medicine. So story number three.
Yeah, story number three is not really in the category of wacky, weirdo, sci-fi kind of out there stuff like the first two stories. And I don't mean to degrade the stories, but just, they're not. This story is a little more down home, if you will, in the medical world, but still very impressive from its technological advance. So the headline here is scientists have devised a way to 3D print biomaterial inside the human body. And I got this from futurism.com, a wonderful website. So again, as we just said, here's another fascinating breakthrough from our friends in Australia. I call it another wonder from down under. So here we go. A team of engineers at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia, has developed a tiny, flexible, endoscopic-like robotic arm that can 3D print biomaterial directly on the surface of organs inside a person's body. But wait a minute, time out. What's a biomaterial? So biomaterial refers to a synthetic or natural material suitable for use in constructing artificial organs and prostheses, or to replace bone or tissue. So that's the generic of what biomaterial refers to. So here's the deal. Existing 3D bioprinting techniques require biomaterials to be made outside the body, and implanting that into a person would usually require large open field, open surgery, which increases infection risk. So one, the bioprinting of these organ replacements or so on and so forth have to be done outside the body. Then you got to make a big incision and implant.
Yeah.
Right.
I had no idea that they referred to open field as in, you know, that's the part where they kind of open you up and, you know, have it, you know, have the surgeon's arms inside you. But yeah, open field. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, it's like good old open heart surgery, which I experienced. Well, I wasn't awake, but
good.
anyway, so the futuristic device in question acts, just like an endoscope. And if you're familiar with endoscopes, the tubular things that they either send down this way or up the other way, if you know what I mean. A futuristic device acts just like an endoscope that can snake its way into a specific location inside the patient's body to deliver layers of special biomaterial to reconstruct tissue, clean up wounds, and even make precise incisions. So this is an amazing jack of all trades, they say, could revolutionize certain types of surgery, not all, but many, right? And when it reaches its target area, it can 3D print biomaterial for a variety of purposes, as we just alluded to, including reconstruction of wounds such as gastric wall injuries or damage inside the colon. So they're really very optimistic that this new device is going to be a big help to the medical community, reduce cost, and reduce the trauma of ordinarily having to open someone up to put in a biomaterial printed thing. So pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how far they can kind of take this, and if this, you know, I often wonder about this, Ralph. Like, with new technology like this coming out, I am curious if this might lead to, you know, someone who may have needed to just replace the whole heart, for instance, if they can use one of these bots to go in and kind of sew or make a patch or something like that. And instead of needing a heart transplant, hey, they just need a little bit of work done and they, get in there and do that. So
sure. Ben, so it might be like a small incision in, as to your point, in the upper sternum area or something like that, where you could insert this tube as opposed to having to crack the and open you up.
Yes. Yeah. And just being able to patch things instead of actually having to replace them in organs. And, you know, it's very, very exciting. And the video was very, very cool.
Yes, it is.
You know, yeah, the fact that they could, you know, do so many things with this one tool. Very cool. And hey, I hope to see more of that, because that's going to save lives. And you know, we definitely appreciate that. So story number four. And, yes. You know, this is, we were just talking about saving lives and that kind of thing. This might be this might be the game ender. This might be what takes us over. So organoid intelligence, what is that? What's story number four?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've spent the last several years been so many stories about artificial intelligence, and then of course that's not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got, it's like the movie What About Bob? Remember, I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
I never saw that one.
Crazy guy who takes up with the family of a psychiatrist. He tracks them to their vacation home. And he has many, many phobias. And he tells one of his worries, he's worried about germs or whatever. And the little boy in the family says, oh, this is great. Bob has given me something else to worry about. Something new.
I gotcha.
Anyway, I digress. We've gotten our hands, try to wrap our hands around artificial intelligence, and now we've got a new thing not to worry about, that's the wrong way of couching this, but a new thing to be aware of, organoid intelligence. What? Got this from CNN and also have dug around, and there are many other articles about what we're going to talk about. And believe me, I saved the weirdest news for last. So here we go. Computers powered by human brain cells may sound like science fiction, you bet, but a team of pioneering researchers at Johns Hopkins University believe such machines, part of a new field called organoid intelligence, could shape the future. So we're talking about Johns Hopkins University, not a weird, strange, you know, science fi bunch out in Nowheresville. This is the right. real deal when you're talking about Johns Hopkins. Okay. So first, what are organoids? Organoids are lab-grown tissues that resemble organs, hence organoids. And these small three-dimensional structures, usually derived from stem cells, have been used in labs for nearly two decades to help avoid harmful human or animal testing by experimenting on them instead as stand-ins for kidneys, lungs, and other organs. So that's what organoids are. So organoids are very well established.
Right.
Now, Professor Thomas Hartung at Johns Hopkins University, he's also with the Whiting School of Engineering in Baltimore, who is leading the research team, defines organoid intelligence as reproducing cognitive functions such as learning and sensory processing in a lab-grown human brain model. Wow, we need the Twilight Zone theme song right now.
It's just, what? Well, I mean, the best I got is, you know, is the dink dink. That's the best I got. But really, I mean, so for everyone out there, you know, who hopefully I can break that down a little bit more, which is, to me, that means, I mean, what are humans in us? We sense and we react. You know, we sense the temperature, we see sights, our brain reacts. And what they're saying is that they've grown cells in the lab that sense and then process and react to those senses. So they're not technically alive, but they're alive, right?
Yeah, you're right. You raise a good point. It's like fuzzy logic. It's somewhere we're being challenged. What is life, right?
Right.
What is being alive? What is being conscious? We're now in an
era. At its very basic level, these are alive. So, yeah.
You're right. In artificial intelligence, it's all this whole idea of at what point could a machine through artificial intelligence have awareness, self-consciousness, that sort of stuff. But here we're talking about with a biological base with these organoids. Wow, we're going into a whole new territory. So yeah. Organoid intelligence.
By the way, it seems like these universities have coined this instead of AI, artificial intelligence, it's OI, which is
exactly
organoid
right.
intelligence. So OI.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And friends, if this is the first time you're hearing about it, and this past week when I put these stories together, it was the first time for me too. What this is, talk about trends. We're really going to have to keep an eye on this. This is fascinating stuff. And in fact, I'll slightly digress for a moment. I just saw a story yesterday and I didn't have a chance to dig into it, but it sounds diabolical. But somebody, I don't know who the research team was, took 20 brains from mice, link them together somehow in the lab to create a thinking, I guess I'll call
so,
it an entity.
So they're able to
system.
Link 20 mice brains into a single consciousness. It is essentially what they're trying.
Well, you know, I need to read the article, but I mean, it's another example. And they talked about organoid intelligence. So this is going to be a new buzzword. You were at the very bleeding beginnings of this thing. So you heard it first on Computer America.
Very strange. I look forward to that. now would be a good time to kind of mention to everyone that, you know, Ralph comes on every Friday, but unfortunately I'm the one who has to cancel next week because I'll be out traveling. But then the following week, you know, hey, we might be able to hear that story and many others. So no show the week of the 24th. So March 24th, no show. And then we'll be back that makes it the 31st. So, yep.
Got it. Yeah, cool. And so to conclude or go on forward what we're talking about, another way to do this or to sort of wrap up what we're talking about here. So what we're talking about here is the goal to grow experimental, interconnected clumps of brain organoids and then create technology that would make it possible to turn those clumps of brain cells into powerful and efficient computers. So the researchers at Johns Hopkins aren't talking about trying to create like a Frankenstein person or something like that, but rather computers. It's so curious. So brain organoids, and they stress this in the article, brain organoids don't actually resemble tiny versions of the human brain, but the pen dot size cell cultures contain neurons that are capable of brain-like functions, forming a multitude of connections. So there's neurons and so forth. So, okay, timeout, reality check. The research team stresses this is very, very early stage work with a lot of hurdles to be conquered. So, for example, to make an organoid intelligence, we'll call it brain, a reality would require a huge scaling up. Each organoid is too small, containing about 50,000 cells. For fully viable organoid intelligence system or brain, the researchers say the number would need to be increased by a factor of 10 million.
Wow.
So imagine 10 million of these 50,000 cell each organoids, brain organoids. And another big challenge, finding ways to communicate. This gets really weird. Finding ways to communicate with the brain organoids in order to send them information and then receive readouts or feedback of what the organoids are thinking. Wow.
Great. Now okay. We have to teach them English as well. Okay. I got it.
Well, yeah, that too. So, and I'm sure you've been thinking this too. I can see my kind of takeaway at this point is I can see good, of course, but also scary possibilities. And in fact, my friend Mark Mason, host of the Mark Mason Show at KEX Radio here in Portland, Oregon, I do a thing with him every week. Of course, we covered this story too, very briefly. And he said, I can see it now. We're going to have the Organator. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But on the positive side, the research team quoted one possibility here. On the positive side, the research team noted that one of a host of application possibilities for these brain organoid systems would be, which could be developed from skin samples of patients with neural disorders. You could use this to test how different medicines and other factors could impact them. So they see a medical research, hence Johns Hopkins University. Right. That makes sense, right? And brain organoids could also open up a new way of understanding human cognition. So friends, again, we're at the twinkling beginnings of this organoid intelligence revolution. Who knows where this is going to take us, but wow.
Yeah, and you know, the end of that article, which I encourage everyone to go read, that you found on CNN, you know, really gets into the fact that, although I don't really agree with the assertion, you know, because there are sensors for things like that. They're saying that ChatGPT can't react to, you know, while it can collect everything on the internet, it can't react to changes in room temperature or, you know, other things that kind of affect us as humans and cells and whatnot. Although I think with enough sensors, you know, ChatGPT could probably tell you that the temperature went down 1 degrees, you know, things like that.
Sure.
But also they kind of mentioned that, you know, for a little food for thought here at the end of the show, they're saying that as they continue this and as they scale up, eventually these things are going to be fully thinking cognitive computers, and ethicists are going to have to be involved every step of the way, because at what point is it, you know, feeling and reacting, like, you know, like I was talking about earlier, and at what point is it, okay, this thing is bored, it is in pain, it is in, you know, XYZ. These are real problems that eventually they think might come up in this field. So it's scary, but still very cool at the same time. You know, it's creating something completely new.
Yeah. And as you were speaking, talking about, you know, what happens if they get bored or this or that and the other on, I think it's, is it Netflix? I'm trying to remember who has it. No, I think it's Peacock. Peacock has a movie called Megan, about a futuristic companion robot that goes kind of nonlinear. It starts thinking for itself. And wow. I mean, if you want to see a really weird sci-fi flick, it's sort of like a very sophisticated Chucky kind of movie on Peacock, a film called Megan. But again, you can see good and scary possibilities with all this stuff. So we'll see.
It definitely does. And hey, you know, that's a lot of research, but luckily you seem to find a lot of the research that's either trying to solve something, cure something, or, you know, just trying to head off problems before they're even problems. So ladies and gentlemen, those are the stories for today. You can check out more at computeramerica.com or more on Ralph's site. And yeah, we'll have those up here in a moment. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning into the program. Again, no show the week of the 24th, but then we'll be back on the 31st. So everyone, have a great month. Have a great day. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a good one. Bye-bye.